electric radio free. You see blue skies and think of sea. How are you doing? And later on, switch on the TV. They give me the news, they give half truths to me. They give us wise, they feed us lies. How are we doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Educate, they fabricate. And we sit back till it's
the Radio Avenger.
Uncensored Radio Free America.
Rick Adams is on.
Good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are back tonight after the weekend, and, well, it's nice to be back. Short week for us, but here we are on Thanksgiving week, giving thanks for the time that we have together and the grace and freedom that we still have left in America today in these days of apostasy and declenching. Well, tonight, as I promised you, we will have a debate here on the program. We'll introduce our guests right after the first break. I'll just tell you a little bit about each of them now and how it will work. As you know, we did have a debate a couple of weeks or so ago between two gentlemen on the subject of creationism in the Bible with two divergent views. And tonight we will do something similar. We will be debating the topics pertaining to the Jewish Zionist state in the Middle East, and there will be several issues that we will try to get through and have each of our participants debate, and we will deal with that in just a moment. But we do have two guests tonight, Andrew Mathis, who is a teacher of English and Humanities at Villanova University, if I'm not mistaken. And he also co-edits a website, as far as I know. And he, of course, is taking a position that will be opposite Frank White. Frank White is describing himself as a white populist nationalist blogger who is dedicated to exposing Jewish supremacy and international Zionism. So we will begin when we come back by saying hello to our guests, and I just ask that our guests, I will ask questions because I've been asked to host this debate, and I had nothing to do really with selecting the main topics, but in turn, when we ask a question of these particular topics, we will give ourselves a chance to do a follow-up question of the speaker, so that I will have that opportunity to ask a follow-up question, and then we'll go to the next guest, and we will have a give and take in between so that they will be able to ask each other questions. Obviously, the only most important rule is try not to speak over each other. That's all I ask, because it does get very frustrating when two people are talking at the same time. Nobody is heard that way. So we try to avoid that on the program. Just be courteous and just be as civil as possible. The topics certainly are very controversial topics having to do with Israel. Is it an apartheid state? And is Israel guilty of genocide? Those are the two questions, among others, that have been forthcoming for us tonight. And as I say, they will certainly consume quite a bit of time, I'm sure. And in the second hour, we will invite listeners to chime in with a question or comment on the debate. All righty, we'll be back, and we'll say hello to our guests tonight on the program, Uncensored Radio Free America. I'm Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of Talk Radio, only here on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
It's not a matter of if, but when. If it happens, you want to be ready to give your loved ones a fighting chance. Do not rely on someone else to come through for you at a time when it could be about life and death. Your best chance is Safe Castle Royal, the premier crisis preparedness buyers club out there. Members get everything at rock-bottom pricing, with at least 20% off everything in our store all the time, and free shipping to the lower 48. Emergency storage food, prefab shelters and safe rooms, and hundreds of other essential products will get you through the toughest of times. Right now, you can join the club for only $10, a one-time lifetime fee that gets you some of the best prices anywhere on preparedness products. Please use the coupon code Club Radio when joining to receive your special membership price. Do it now. Go to SafeCastleRoyal.com. That's SafeCastleRoyal.com. Sign up and use the Club Radio coupon code or call 1-877-673-2394 and be on your way to peace of mind that comes with being prepared.
Do you have a high electric bill? Do you use an electric company that just provides you expensive electricity? Not anymore. Visit www.energy-swap.com and take advantage of a new way to save on your monthly energy bill. Allow Energy Swap to switch your provider and receive the same reliable service and the best rewards program in the industry. Save up to 20% on your electric bill. Rates as low as 10.99 cents per kilowatt. No cost to switch. Flat rate plans. Reward program. What more could you ask for? A free gift. Try Energy Swap and receive a free getaway for two. Sign up today. 888-238-6397. That's 888-238-6397. Visit our website, www.energy-swap.com, and use the tool generator to calculate how much you can save on your monthly energy bill. 888-238-6397. Currently in Texas and New York only. Other states coming soon.
Get Back at 'em with Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
All right, I'm here to begin the program, ladies and gentlemen, and we are going to say hello now to Andrew Mathis and Frank White. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hello?
Yes, is that you, Andrew?
This is Andrew. Hello?
Good evening, Mr. Adams. This is Frank White.
Oh, Frank White. Okay. And Andrew, you're there, right?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
Do you mind if I just call you by your first names?
Not a problem.
Okay, very good.
Perfectly
keep
fine
it
with
simple.
Me.
Now, let me ask you this. Who would like to start off receiving my question first?
You can go first if you'd like, Dr. Mathis.
Okay.
Sure.
Andrew, my first question then, as I have been asked to structure this debate with several basic and fundamental questions, has to do with the state of Israel as a Jewish state, a Zionist state in the Middle East. The question is Israel, both Israel proper and in the occupied territories, is it an apartheid state, if you will?
Okay, so there's two parts. First of all, categorically, no. In the situation of Israel inside of the pre-June 1967 border, in fact, Israel is the only state in the world with an Arab population of 15% or more where they actually can vote in free elections, which is kind of an embarrassment to the rest of the Arab world. But nevertheless, it's true. There's no law in Israel proper that prevents Arabs from serving in parliament, or for that matter, even being prime minister. I forget what his name is now. But in the 2000 election, a prominent Christian Arab ran for prime minister for a short period of time. In the occupied territories, it's different, obviously. You have a full-on military occupation going on there. Would I call it apartheid? No. And I'm actually going to quote from President Carter's book with regard to this and give essentially, because I think that my answer to his is, his answer, rather, is the same as the one that I would give. He says, and this is from pages 189 to 190 in his book, Palestine Peace, Not Apartheid. He says, the driving purpose for the forced separation of the two people is unlike that in South Africa, not racism, but the acquisition of land. Now, President Carter calls this apartheid, although actually he doesn't use the word more than once or twice throughout the entire book. But if it's not separation based on race or ethnicity or something like that, then technically speaking, it's not apartheid because the apartheid laws were based on race.
All right, Frank, how would you respond to that question?
Well, I would have to refer to United Nations Special Rapporteur for the United Nations Human Rights Council, John Dugard. He is a judge ad hoc for the International Court of Justice. In his report of January 2007, at the fourth session of the Human Rights Council, Mr. Dugard issued the following statements in his report on Israel. The international community has identified three regimes as inimical to human rights: colonialism, apartheid, and foreign occupation. Israel is clearly in military occupation of the occupied Palestinian territories. At the same time, elements of the occupation constitute forms of colonialism and of apartheid, which are contrary to international law. Mr. Dugard, if I may say, Rick, Mr. Dugard certainly does not support the view of Dr. Mathis. Dr. Dugard continues, Israel laws and practices in the occupied territories certainly resemble aspects of apartheid and fall within the scope of the 1973 International Conventions on the Suppression and Punishment of the Crime of Apartheid. The apartheid comparison has also been made by reputable human rights organizations. I refer to B'Tselem, the Israeli Information Center for Human Rights in the Occupied Territory, from their 2003 report titled Land Grab: Israel's Settlement Policy in the West Bank. They say that Israel has created in the occupied territories a regime of separation based on discrimination, applying two separate systems of law in the same area and basing the rights of individuals on their nationality. This regime is the only one of its kind in the world and is reminiscent of distasteful regimes from the past, such as the apartheid regime in South Africa. They later reaffirm this point with the statement, the settlement enterprise in the occupied territories has created a system of legally sanctioned separation based on discrimination that has perhaps no parallel anywhere in the world since the dismantling of the apartheid regime in South Africa. Okay, now here's another interesting point, and I'm going to bring this up again from John Dugard. This is from his report of August 17, 2007. Checkpoints divide the West Bank into four distinct areas: the north, Nablus, Jenin, and Tulkarm; the center, Ramallah; and the south, Hebron and East Jerusalem. Within these areas, further enclaves have been created by a system of checkpoints and roadblocks. Moreover, highways for the use of Israelis only further fragment the occupied territory into 10 small cantons or Bantustans. You will note, Rick, that B'Tselem draws clear comparisons between Israeli behavior in the occupied territories to apartheid, while Mr. Dugard uses the term Bantustans to describe Palestinian areas that are cut off. The original Bantustans, as we knew them, were black homelands in apartheid South Africa.
All right. Now, would both of you agree with this statement that comes from someone who has written for Haaretz newspaper some time ago? It was a column written by an Arab who was allowed to write in Haaretz, and it basically says, Israel defines itself as a country not of its citizens, but of its, quote, Jewish people everywhere, unquote. No other country defines itself as a country for members of a particular religion or ethnic group, including converted, regardless of where they live. No other country has supranational entities that have authority superseding state authority and native people's rights. The result is that the land is taken from native Christians and Muslims and turned over to settlements under such anti-human rights laws as the absentee property law and the Jewish law of return. That is the right of return. And that is part of the statement that was made. Now, Andrew, how do you feel about that? Is that not the case? Is it not a strictly Jewish state, an exclusivist state?
Is it strictly a Jewish state and an exclusive? Well, there's a couple of things that come up here. First of all, there are a lot of regular Arab writers for Haaretz. It's not unusual that there would be an Arab writer, or for that matter, several columnists. It's a left-wing paper. The point that you're making, I think, is that
well, I'm not making the point. I mean, that's the statement. Do you agree with it or not?
Well, I agree with parts of it, and I disagree with parts of it.
All right,
I
which parts do you agree with, and which do you disagree with?
I agree with the parts that indicate that Israel is taking land in the occupied territories, turning it over to Jewish citizens of Israel, and expropriating it from Palestinians, whether they're Christian or Muslim, doesn't really matter. That's undeniably true. I take issue, I think, specifically with the idea that Israel is some sort of supranational entity that has jurisdiction over Jews elsewhere in the world. I mean, I'm sure that there are Israelis that feel that way, and I'm sure that there are Jews that feel that way, but to say that the majority of the Jews in the world feel that way, or the majority of Jews in Israel, for that matter, feel that way, I don't see that. I don't think that it's true. Jews are bound by the laws in, you know, of the countries in which they live. If they live in Israel, they're bound by those laws. If they live elsewhere, they're bound by the laws in those countries. I'm bound by the laws of the United States of America and not by Israel, and I'm glad that I'm not.
Okay, now let me follow up on something you said earlier in describing the situation, not in the occupied territories, but in Israel proper. You mentioned
sure.
that Israel is a land where Arabs can actually vote and be elected to the Knesset. I think you said some 15%, right?
It's the only country that has an Arab population of 15% or more where there are actually free elections and that Arabs can be represented in the parliament.
Now, would you say then that that is a true democracy?
Is it a true democracy? It's a democracy with faults, which is to say that there's no questioning that Arabs are second-class citizens in Israel.
Mm.
But their situation actually is better than that of, say, blacks in the South before the civil rights era because they're voting in Israel. In fact, they were decisive in the 1999 election of Ehud Barak as prime minister. I think more than 90% of the Arabs in Israel voted for him, and they were seemed to be the major voting bloc that elected him in over Netanyahu. In the South, before the 1960s, you had voter intimidation, you had disenfranchisement going back to the turn of the 20th century, and blacks didn't vote. And that's a major aspect. In fact, it's really the defining aspect of citizenship.
Okay, let's take away the word apartheid and let's just leave it at exclusivist. Is Israel an exclusivist state? By that, I mean, of course, that it is exclusively Jewish and does not allow for any population to supersede or outnumber the Jewish majority.
Oh, it is definitely there's no question that it is the goal of the state of Israel to remain predominantly Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a direct enough answer to your question.
No, okay. I see we're up against the clock, so I'm going to ask the same questions when we come back to Frank and give
okay.
him a chance to respond, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then, gentlemen. You stay right where you are. Andrew Mathis is our guest, and he's a teacher of English and Humanities at Villanova. And we have with us Frank White, who is a white populist nationalist and a blogger. So we will return and continue throughout the hour with this interview. And I trust that the gentlemen can stay into the second hour, both of you, and we will open up the lines to phone calls at that point. So stay tuned for more Uncensored Radio Free America, only here with Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Well, Mike, are
you
coming in okay now?
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web, 24 hours a day, at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
Stand up and be counted. Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist Bush's impending unjust attack against Iran. George W. Bush lied to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iraq. Now he is lying to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iran. But Catholic and Protestant clergy have failed miserably to come out publicly against the upcoming unjust attack of Iran. Therefore, the lay Catholics and Protestants should demand of their respective clergies to take a righteous public stand against this upcoming Iranian unjust war. Each one of us will render to God a strict account of what each of us did to stop these diabolical tyrants, like George W. Bush, who, as roaring lions, go about the world seeking whom to murder. For additional facts concerning this upcoming Iranian unjust war, order the one-hour lecture by Father John Martinez entitled Stand Up and Be Counted. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on the web banner for more information and ordering.
All right, sirs, we're back now with another segment here until the next break, and then we'll have a lot of time in between to talk. And I just wanted to give Frank White now a chance to respond to my question as well. And that
Rick,
to
real
be...
quick?
Who's this now? Is this Andrew?
It's Andrew. I just wanted to let you know I'm not going to be able to stay for the second hour.
Oh, you won't be able to?
I won't be able to stay
for
the second
hour. Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's fine.
Stick around, Rick.
Who's that?
I can stick around.
Okay. All right. Well, then we'll open up for callers and so forth. But let's have you, Frank. Let's have you answer that question then, just to be you know, specific about what we're talking about now. And Andrew agrees that yes, the very nature of the Israeli regime really is one of being a Jewish state, and therefore it has exclusivity. Would you agree with that, or would you go in a different direction on that question?
Well,
the one
thing I wouldn't do is drop the apartheid issue when it comes to the occupied territories. But we can.
Well, we're talking specifically even about the Israel proper, Israel itself, without getting into the territories now.
Of course. And now I am going to talk about Israel. And to really understand the level of bigotry and Jewish supremacism that exists within Israel, I would like to go to the human rights groups. We begin with the Association for Civil Rights in Israel, from the report Equality for Arab Citizens of Israel. The first thing I discover is that they make reference to the Ore Commission, which issued a report in 2003. This commission stated that the government's handling of its Arab minority was primarily neglectful and discriminatory, and was not sensitive to the needs of the Arab community. Now, this is further illustrated in the report with the following statement. The government's discriminatory policies and biased budget allocations have led to widespread poverty, unemployment, housing shortages, inequitable land distribution, inadequate education facilities, and substantially defective infrastructure that have effectively turned the members of the Arab minority into second-class citizens. 50% of Arab families in Israel are currently living below the poverty line. The vast majority of localities that have been hard hit by unemployment are Arab localities. Only 5.5% of the state's civil servants are Arab. The average earned income of Arab citizens is 30% lower than that of Jewish citizens. Arab schools are understaffed and under-equipped as a result of inequitable government funding policies. Class sizes in Arab community schools are more than 25% larger than in Jewish schools, and the percentage of students who do not complete 12 years of schooling is three times higher among Arabs than among Jews. Despite the myriad of social and economic inequalities, only 3% of the government's development budget for 2005 was specifically designated for Israel's Arab citizenry, which actually makes up approximately 20% of the population of the country, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
just if I can make one
very
quick point.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think the latest figure I saw was it makes up 14%. All non-Jewish groups, 23.6%, but the actual Arab population that is not Druze, but rather is Muslim or Christian, is more along the lines of 14 to 15%.
So you're arguing over percentages, really, not over the principles.
Not over principle. I think that everything that Frank said is true.
So where do you two really disagree? I mean, I don't hear too much argument here.
Where we disagree essentially is on two issues. The issues of apartheid and the occupied territories. My opponent does not believe that they do. I believe otherwise. The second issue is I believe that Israel practices a form of Lebensraum in the occupied territory, basically eliminating Arab populations, Arab Palestinian populations from parts of the occupied territories to make way for Jewish settlers. And even within Israel itself, we can actually observe that there is a great deal of bigotry amongst the general citizenry of that nation. For example, I have some more statistics, if I may. The following statistics are from Haaretz, the Jerusalem Post, Ynet News, and even the Zionist Organization of America.
Uh-huh.
We learn that 75% of Israeli high school students believe that Arabs are uncivilized and unclean, while 69% of Israeli high school students believe that Arabs are unintelligent. 50% of Israeli students would be unwilling to even meet Arab students, let alone associate with Arabs on a social level. We also learned that 68% of Israelis would refuse to live in the same building as an Arab, while 50% of Israelis refuse to live in the same neighborhood as Arab families. Israeli hatred of Arabs is so strong that 46% of Israelis would not even permit an Arab to visit their home, while 34% of Israelis believe that Arab culture is inferior to their culture. And in fact, there's some very vicious in statistics. For example, 46% of Israelis would like to see the Palestinians forcibly cleansed from the occupied Palestinian territories, which is actually taking place in some areas because they are being removed from various areas to make way for Jewish settlers.
Yeah, and right, that's in violation of international law as well.
Oh,
now, we're up against the break here, gentlemen, so if you wish to reply to any of that, Andrew, you may, but when we come back in the next half hour, I'd like to get into the other question, which is probably going to be even more controversial, and that will be, is Israel guilty of ethnic cleansing or genocide, all right? We'll do that.
Sure.
When we come back, gentlemen. Frank White and Andrew Mathis, my guests, debating these topics right here on the program, Uncensored, Radio Free America, with yours truly, Radio Avenger Rick Adams.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Do you have a high electric bill? Do you use an electric company that just provides you expensive electricity? Not anymore. Visit www.energy-swap.com and take advantage of a new way to save on your monthly energy bill. Allow Energy Swap to switch your provider and receive the same reliable service and the best rewards program in the industry. Save up to 20% on your electric bill. Rates as low as 10.99 cents per kilowatt. No cost to switch. Flat rate plan. Reward program. What more could you ask for? A free gift. Try Energy Swap and receive a free getaway for two. Sign up today. 888-238-6397. That's 888-238-6397. Visit our website, www.energy-swap.com, and use the tool generator to calculate how much you can save on your monthly energy bill. 888-238-6397. Currently in Texas and New York only. Other states coming soon.
Attention RBN listeners who suffer from excruciating joint pain. If you are interested in suppressed but amazingly effective traditional arthritis remedies, this will be the single most important message you will ever hear. Here's why. Recently, a scientist who specializes in ancient medicine has discovered a 3,000-year-old arthritis remedy that has been proven in studies to not only relieve joint pain and inflammation, but also to rebuild damaged cartilage as well. And the amazing thing is just how fast it works. In fact, relief for me came in less than a week. Now, because of the rules governing nutritional supplements in this country, no health or healing claims can be made for this ancient remedy. However, it is still legal to own it, and right now a small amount is available to our listeners. Keep in mind, shipments get filled on a first-come, first-served basis, so it's important that you take immediate action by going to www.321relief.com. And the best part? RBN listeners pay absolutely nothing today. Simply go to 321relief.com. That's www.321relief.com, or call 815-259-4555. For details.
Rick Adams is back. Live, uncensored, Radio Free America continues on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
All right, I'm back now, and we are going to continue right up to the end of this hour with a debate, and then I guess in the next hour we'll have questions for Frank because Andrew can't stay. But we might be able to entertain one question possibly before the end of this this hour. All right, we'll try, but can't promise. Now, here's the next question that I'm going to ask each of you. First of all, before I ask you if, in fact, Israel has been guilty of genocide, let me ask you, each of you, to define what genocide means to your definition. Andrew, why don't you tell us first what genocide means to you?
I'd be sticking to the UN definition, which is in five parts. Number one, killing members of the group, obviously. Two, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. Third, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Fourth, imposing measures intended to prevent births. Fifth, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group.
All right. Now, would you say that Israel has done at least some, if not all, of those things?
Well, there are some of the, there are some that they have never done, like forcibly transferring children. As far as imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group, I don't know. I mean, if we talk about there being a million Arabs inside of west of the Jordan River in 1948 before the war started, and about 85% of them being expelled, and now we have over 4 million Palestinians in the world, and in fact the Arab population of Israel has grown by 1,000% over the last 60 years, I'd say that if they're imposing measures intended to prevent births, they're doing a really terrible job of it. Have they killed members of the group? Absolutely. And Palestinians have killed Israelis. It's part of the situation of being in a state of war. Causing serious bodily or mental harm? Absolutely. Same thing. Deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction? Definitely they're inflicting poor conditions of life in the occupied territories. To bring about their physical destruction, I would say no. To get them to leave, I would say yes.
So you would say that some of those points of the UN definition of genocide have indeed been the responsibility of the Israeli governments.
Yes, but I wouldn't characterize it as genocide because I don't think that the intent in any of these measures was to wipe out the Palestinians entirely as a group.
Well, now I'm sure you're aware of in the history of Israel since 1948 and prior to that, of the statements of some of the leaders, Ben-Gurion, Menachem Begin, and others who have boasted that they believed, in fact, I don't have it in front of me here, I wish I did, but Begin actually believed in a master race. He believed that Jews were chosen by God to take that land of Palestine and regather there. And
they
follow the Talmudic teaching. And wait a minute now. Wait a minute. Let me finish the statement now. They believe in the Talmudic statement that the life, for instance, of all of the Palestinians is not equal to a fingernail of a Jew. Now, would you not characterize that as racially motivated hatred based on the idea of supremacy, and therefore the act of genocide would be justified in their minds? No?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to defend Menachem Begin on pretty much anything.
But he was one of the leaders of Israel, and you're saying that did not happen.
I'm not saying that these things did not happen. What I'm saying is that I'm not going to defend Begin's point of view. He's a loathsome person to me.
Okay.
And so I refuse to defend his point of view. Now, there's something in what you're saying that implies that Begin's way of thinking emanated from his orientation toward the Talmud.
Mm-hmm.
That's an entirely different issue and one that I think it's a little bit too broad to get into right now. But,
well, you know, I bring it up because the Talmud is central to the thinking of many of the Jewish fundamentalists and extremists and Zionists, in fact, rabbis particularly, in Israel today, who do call, by the way, for the total expulsion, as you know, of the Arab population from all of the areas, including some will go so far as to say from the Euphrates to the Nile, because that is what they believe to be their land of Israel. So I'm sure you're aware of that, right?
Yeah, I'm absolutely aware of that, but at the same time, any Orthodox rabbi is going to be oriented toward Talmud, and I don't know if you know who Michael Melchior is, but he's the head of a party called Meimad in Israel, and he is part of the, they run essentially with the labor government, and he's been involved in the peace movement for the last 17 years. The notion, and again, it's not something that I want to get into in detail because it's not something that we have time to discuss, and maybe for another show, but
sure.
I mean, you're not going to find in the Talmud a statement that, you know, a million Gentile lives aren't worth a Jewish fingernail. I mean, yes, Rabbi Perrin, I think it was, said that. Does it say that in the Talmud? No, it doesn't.
Well, let me ask you this. Is that statement codified in the Talmud? Does not the Talmud speak of Jewish supremacy? And without getting into a great debate about the Talmud, is that not contained? And I don't know if you have, in fact, read much of the Talmud, have you?
I've read pretty much the entire thing.
You have?
I own a copy of it, yeah.
Okay, and how many pages is it, the copy you have?
Well, I have it on CD-ROM, but bound, it comes to about 50 bound volumes. You spend years studying the thing. Basically, I mean, the point to make about the Talmud is, can you find the kinds of statements that you're suggesting in there? Yes, you can. Can you find the exact opposite statements like those? Yes, you can. There are as many pro-Gentile statements in the Talmud as there are anti-Gentile statements in the Talmud.
So you're saying it's like a mixed bag is what you're implying.
It's an incredibly mixed bag.
Let me ask Frank now the same question. How do you define genocide, Frank? And we'll go from there.
Well, Professor Mathis offered the definition from the United Nations Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, which was General Assembly Resolution 260. And I completely agree with that. In fact, Part 2, Article 6 of the Rome Statute of the International Court of Justice offers the same in definition. A genocide means any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy in whole or part a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. And I'm just going to limit it to two, killing members of the group and are causing serious bodily or mental harms to members of the group. Now, the one thing we have to remember is when we look at those definitions, it doesn't say that if the population grows, you're not guilty of genocidal acts. It makes it absolutely clear that any sort of murder, such as killing members of a group with intent to even destroy part of that group, will constitute genocide. Now, what's interesting is we also talk about trying to prevent births within the group. Now, this part is somewhat of a long shot, but it may fit in. But certainly, there is no doubt, in my view, that Israel has committed acts of genocide. I refer to the Human Rights Organization Defense of Children International Palestine section for my example. The Palestinians have lost 128 children per month since 2000 at the hands of the Israelis. This translates into 10 children per month. DCI makes it clear that historically the Israeli murder of children is not merely accidental deaths during the course of war. DCI reports, and this is a quote from Emmerich, Israeli forces have consistently targeted Palestinian children since 1990.
Right.
Looking at these deaths as a percentage of total deaths, Palestinian children accounted for more than 20% of total deaths for every year since 1990 to 2001. Between 1997 to 1999, Palestinian children represented more than 50% of all total deaths. We also learn from DCI that a large percentage of Israeli murders were of the youngest children. According to DCI, 14.1% of all Palestinian child casualties between 2000 and 2007 were between the ages of 0 and 8. In addition, 16% of child casualties were between the ages of 9 and 12. In total, 30.1% of all child casualties have been under the age of 12. For the year of 2006 alone, DCI issued a scathing report condemning Israel's war on children. During this period, and they write, during this period, Palestinian children have suffered countless violations of their rights, including violations of the right to life. According to the Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics, in 2006, there were an estimated 2.1 million children living in the OPT. These children constitute over half of the Palestinian population in the OPT. The right to life, survival, and development is the most fundamental of all human rights of the child. In spite of this, Israel has repeatedly and arbitrarily deprived Palestinian children of the right to life in violation of Article 6 of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, to which it is a state party. Israel has waged a military campaign, Rick, against Palestinian children. Children are the creators of the future generations of any population group, and Israel has targeted the future of the Palestinian people in a systemic campaign of child murder. As each child dies, one less Palestinian family will have the opportunity to come into existence. Israel has committed a blatant act of genocide just in this regard. Israel, with clear intent to kill at least part of a population, has destroyed a vital, precious part of that population. These actions certainly meet the internationally accepted definitions as I understand them. In addition...
Rick, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Frank, finish, and then I'd like to make a very, very brief
response.
Yes,
we will allow you to respond.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Frank. Just complete the
No problem. In addition, we learned from John Dugard, Special Rapporteur from the United Nations Human Rights Council, in his report of September 5th, 2006, Israel has in addition violated the most fundamental rules of international humanitarian law. These include direct attacks against civilians and civilian objects and attacks which fail to distinguish between military targets and civilians or civilian objects. The excessive use of force arising from disproportionate attacks on civilians and civilian objects, the spreading of terror among the civilian population, and the destruction of property not justified by military necessity.
Okay. All right. You've given us quite a bit, quite a mouthful.
Yes,
what did you want to respond to now, Andrew? You don't agree with what he's saying?
I agreed with everything beginning with the UN. I disagree with everything before it. What he's sourcing is the Palestinian group. What I'd like to see, I'm not saying that he's wrong. I'm saying that what I'd like to see is it corroborated.
We're getting a distortion on your end right now.
Is this better?
Speak a little bit more clearly. I think we are getting a little distortion, but go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Yeah, I can hear you.
I would like to see it independently corroborated by a nonpartisan group such as Amnesty International. That Israel is deliberately killing children.
Well, I mean, Amnesty International, to my knowledge, has indeed reported as well on
I've never
this,
seen it.
And the Red Cross, the International, Amnesty International, Peace Now, various other groups within and without Israel have in fact documented the fact that there is a deliberate policy, that is a policy aimed at wiping out civilians. And of course, the fact is the very occupation itself, a military occupation, in violation of resolutions 242, 243, and probably over 80 more UN resolutions, not that I'm trumpeting the UN, I'm just stating them.
Well, Rick,
the fact is that all of these seem to indicate a very clear pattern of ethnic cleansing.
Well, but
I don't see how we can deny that, can we?
My point was not that Israel is not engaging in ethnic cleansing or hasn't in the past. My point was specifically that Israel targets children. And
well, that's
Frank's
part of the ethnic cleansing.
Well,
why would you not target children as civilians? If you're doing ethnic cleansing, why would you not do that? I think Frank raises a good point, and that is that these are the future generation, the future leaders. You remember one of the previous prime ministers who used to boast about breaking the fingers of the Palestinian children so they could not throw stones.
Yeah, it was the same prime minister that signed the Oslo Accord.
Yeah, and he was assassinated.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm saying, is that right? Was that right? And was that not an example of a deliberate policy of singling out children?
Well, sure, but now we're conflating things. I'm not able to get my point across.
All right, let him finish, Frank.
Yes.
Which is simply this. Frank has cited a particular source about the deliberate targeting of children. Mm-hmm. I want to see this deliberate targeting of children, not as part of the civilian population, but children specifically. I want to see that independently corroborated by an outside source like Amnesty, like Human Rights Watch. Anything like that, because what he said, and this is not to say that all Palestinian sources are prejudiced, but we have seen the Palestinian press play fast and loose with the facts, just like we've seen the Israeli press do it. It's far better when the information comes
from
somebody that's...
Frank, would you agree that you're saying that you would agree with that statement, that the only sources are Palestinian sources?
Well, Rick, first of all, Defense for Children International is actually a worldwide human rights organization.
Right.
This is coming from Palestine section on the ground. Now,
that's not true.
If you would let me finish.
That's not true.
May I finish, please? All right. Now,
fine.
I can also offer additional numbers, Rick, to illustrate the kind of atrocities and war crimes Israel has committed.
Mm-hmm.
For example, B'Tselem, the Israeli Information Center for Human Rights in the Occupied Territories.
Mm-hmm.
Their numbers indicate that over the Al-Aqsa Intifada up until October 30th, 2007, 87% of all child casualties have been Palestinian. 99% of them have died in the occupied territories.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, 58% of all Palestinian casualties were those who did not take part in hostilities, in comparison to those categorized as Palestinians who did take part in hostilities. So from Beit Salam itself, we learn that first of all, the vast majority of Palestinian child casualties, 99%, died in their own lands at the hands of an occupational army. 58% of all Palestinian casualties who are categorized by Beit Salam in one of these two groups, 58% of those were people who did not even take part in hostilities. Now, this alone would indicate to me that we're talking about an act of genocide here. Now,
well, now Andrew says that he doesn't believe the reports unless he can see it verified. Can you give him that verification? Can you provide him with that source?
To be honest with you, as far as Defense of Children International goes, because they have a Palestine section, I highly doubt, honestly, that I will be able to convince them otherwise. But for the statistics from Beit Salam, go to BeitSalam.org and look up the statistics page. It's right
okay.
There.
Okay. All right, we'll be back with our final segment. Gentlemen, stand by. I'll let you respond, Andrew. We'll be back in just 3 minutes with the final segment of this hour. And stay tuned for more Uncensored Radio Free America with Rick Adams, the Paul Revere of Talk Radio.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
The Berkeleyite's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeleyite, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeleyite is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeleyite, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Have you ever considered purchasing storable foods? Well, now is the time to do so and take advantage of Ready Reserve Foods pre-special. Pre-oil shortage, pre-drought, pre-bank collapse, pre-housing collapse, pre-dollar collapse, pre-economic collapse, pre-martial law, pre-war, possibly nuclear, pre-bird flu special. And your order will be shipped within 7 business days, not months like some food brokers. Ready Reserve manufactures the food we sell, and we have done so continuously for over 35 years. Call 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com. We produce only the best in storable foods, all from the USA. 1-800-453-2202. Prepare yourself and family for some rough and bumpy times. 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com.
Don't feel like the Lone Ranger. You've got the Radio Avenger on your side.
Hey, Rick Adams.
Yes, yes, yes. And we're back now to round out this hour. And Andrew Mathis, you still are arguing with what Frank White has said here in citing the statistics about children being deliberately killed by the Israelis.
Right. Like I said, I just would like to see it corroborated by some organization other than DCI Palestine.
And what would you do when you did see that, if you saw that? What would you do about
it? Then I would stand corrected.
And change your mind on anything else, or would it change your position? Would it make a difference, I think, is what we're asking, if it's children or adults who are, you know, deliberately attacked, or whether it's outside observers like Rachel Corrie.
Well, actually, more outside observers have been killed by the Palestinians over the last 7 years than by the Israelis.
Are you certain of that?
I am absolutely 100%.
Are you sure it was the
that.
Palestinians that were responsible, or did you read that somewhere? Do you have corroborative proof?
Yeah, I do.
What is the proof?
You want me to call it up right now?
Sure, if you have it, because you see, I mean, we've been told certain things, and without having an eyeball witness there, because remember, Israel would not allow outside observers in the territories to actually monitor the situation and to see what has been done. You remember when Ariel Sharon was bombing his targets in the occupied territories when George Bush came in to the presidency? What happened? He sealed off all media and the outside world from what was going on, and then a slaughter ensued.
The source for the number of foreign citizens killed over the last 7 years, 63 foreign citizens killed total, 53 killed by Palestinians, 10 killed by Israeli security forces, and the source is B'Tselem.
Now, let me ask you, what were the circumstances under which they were killed, and what identification was made that they were Palestinians? How were they killed? How were they doing the killing? Under what circumstances?
Well,
let's see.
I'm wasting time that I would rather answer other questions doing by looking up this.
No, I'm just saying because,
right,
you see, you understand where I'm going. What I'm trying to say is too often one group of people have been blamed, that is a people that is defenseless, in this case, the civilians particularly. And of course, when they're occupied, then they're going to result in military action. When you're occupied, you obviously fight. You fight for your land, and you become militant. And sometimes people say the militants do more of the killing than the people who are doing the occupy. And all we have is reports that are based on many cases. We don't even have the accurate reports, so we don't have eyewitness accounts.
What I see you doing, Rick, is questioning when I cite B'Tselem, but you're not questioning Frank when he does.
Well, I happen to know, because I've been reading, obviously, I've read this subject for many, many years, and I happen to know that he is right on that, and that there have been a number of corroborative sources that have indeed. And in fact, the U.S. State Department itself issues an annual human rights report.
And somebody can email me something, and I'll gladly
retract. Oh, okay, we'd be happy to do that.
And I will gladly retract. All
okay,
I wanna,
and that's the
I
only support. Reason I'm questioning, because too often we get the Israeli side and we don't get the other side unfettered. Now, what did you want to respond to Frank? We don't have much time, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I think that the last thing that I would just want to say...
Sure, in summation. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it's actually just sort of my final point. I'm not going to...
Okay.
It's not really a summation so much as just a response.
Fair enough.
Which is to say, I think that when, and this is an unfortunate thing about, I mean, there are many unfortunate things about genocide, but one of the unfortunate things from a academic standpoint, let's say, is that you have to be able to quantify it somehow. And to say, if I went across the street and shot my neighbor who happened to be black, does that mean I'm committing genocide against black people? You have to begin to, you have to see it on some kind of a scale, on a large enough scale, that it's taking significant toll on the population.
That's not the definition.
That did not happen.
All right, listen, hey, we're out of time for the hour. I want to thank you. If you have to leave, Andrew, I appreciate your participation in this debate. It was very brave of you.
I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And thanks for coming, Andrew. With